Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcher List podcast network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcher List's bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Hey, Rick, how's it going? First week of the season down.
Yeah, it feels like it's been longer than a week, but yeah, we're week one of 26. Remember, there's 26 weeks. This is just the first week, so let's try not to overreact and panic. Right now, but I understand. I get people get frustrated early, or they overreact to hot starts, and yeah, it's easy to. It's all about, you know, the ebbs and flows of baseball. It's keeping your, you know, your composure through the full 26 weeks or 24 if it's fantasy weeks. But yeah, we're here to try to sort through what's real, what's not, and what's actionable, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's really no fun in that, though.
I know. Yeah.
If you're not really playing fantasy baseball, if you're not taking victory laps first week or singing the demise of your team after one relief pitching blow up. But yeah, it is easy to lose the context, especially after a full off season, of just how much the league will go up and down, or how players will go up and down throughout the season. As you mentioned, yeah, the ebb and flow, the sine wave of both players and your team and the league in general. And by the end of it, it'll all work out. But yeah, it's hard to take yourself out of the moment and see the larger context, especially this early in the season when the stats are all just crazy because of the small sample. But we're going to help you. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you, like, you know, you drafted your team and you're waiting for finally there to be stats. And like, when your reliever has two bad outings, it's like, all right, I'm over it. And like, I can see the ERA right there. It's like really affecting it. It's like, I can see how you can get frustrated, but yeah, it's important to stay even keel. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. But we're going to help everybody sort through the early portion of the season by looking at some bullpens that are still actionable, bullpens where the closing situation has not been decided, or where maybe it appears to be decided and those closers have not yet been picked up. So we'll run through all of those bullpens so that you can get a leg up on the rest of your fantasy league and really lock in on your relief pitchers and your saves. We'll also cover the three up, three down section, which took a break throughout the offseason as it usually does, but it's back for the first edition of 2026, where we'll cover the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. But first, let's talk about some news and notes from the past week, looking at the transactions, injuries, and rumors from around the league. We'll start it off with the transactions. This one's pretty minor, but Jose Leclerc signed a minor league contract with the Padres, just what the Padres need, another reliever. But Jose Leclerc was sort of just decimated by injuries with the A's and just never really got his chance there. But I think he's still young enough that there's a chance that he returns to the majors and isn't absolutely horrid. He's been around for a while, but I think Leclerc is still somebody that could produce a little bit, probably not in fantasy terms though.
Yeah. Especially in that bullpen, it's going to be tough to break into any sort of, you know, leverage role. Mm-hmm. And I think he's aiming to start pitching again. I don't know. I think it was June or July, sometime over the summer. He's still returning from, I forget what the injury
shoulder
was.
Shoulder surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that wasn't that long ago when Leclerc was very interesting. And I mean, I went back in his Rangers days. I was always pretty intrigued, pretty high on Leclerc. But yeah, injuries have just kind of taken their toll on him at this point. But for the Padres, like, might as well, you know, take a minor league chance on him. If you get something, that's great. If not, it's not a big deal. They're not, you know, they don't need this. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see. I hope he gets back. I hope he's healthy and, you know, throwing well again. But yeah, it's probably a ways away until we see him
at the
major league level.
Which may be best for him too, because it'll give him more opportunity to actually get an opportunity in that Padres bullpen. Next, we've got Brian Hudson, who was claimed off waivers from the Mets by the White Sox. Hudson pitched for the White Sox last year, but he had his best times with the Milwaukee Brewers a couple of years ago, but he's sort of fallen off dramatically since then. There's still a lot of potential with Brian Hudson in the White Sox bullpen is a good opportunity for him to reach that. He is in the majors pitching for them. He's already pitched twice. He's got a 7 ERA in a small sample, but it's not looking spectacular. However, there's not a lot of lefties. It's just Sean Newcomb and Chris Murphy in Chicago, on the south side of Chicago. So Brian Hudson could work his way into holds opportunities if he can recover what he had with the Brewers a couple of years ago.
Yeah, maybe. His stuff's kind of taking a hit. He's having a hard time throwing. I think he's sitting like 90 right now. So we'll see. I mean, I Murphy and Newcomb are different because they're more long guys for the White Sox. So they don't really have that, like, you know, just one inning like lefty out guy. So maybe Hudson can work into that role. We'll see.
Another lefty to discuss is Javian Sandridge, who was traded by the Angels to the Orioles in exchange for cash considerations. I was surprised by this one, mostly because the Angels are always in need of pitching. So to get rid of somebody that has potential like Sandridge in exchange for cash considerations is, to me, a little bit short-sighted. Sandridge was pitching for the Yankees last year, and in the minors, he displayed significant strikeout upside. This was a guy who was striking out 33% of the batters he faced throughout the minors last year. He's somebody who doesn't have a lot of control, though. However, he throws in the mid-90s, so there's certainly an opportunity for him to display some upside with the Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably better than Joey Lucchesi right now. They're still hanging on to. So, yeah, it's the Angels are going to do what they do. That's a tough Orioles. It's going to be tough for him to break through too. If they already have Wolfram up, and once Aiken returns, they're, you know, Wolfram probably goes down. So yeah, I don't know if Sandridge will ever really get a chance there, but he was always kind of an interesting arm. We'll see what happens.
All right. Next, we've got Dylan Smith, who was traded by the Tigers to the Giants in exchange for cash considerations. Giants made a few moves last week with shuffling around their 40-man roster, sending Luis Matos to the Brewers, but they brought in Dylan Smith, and he's got strikeout upside coming over from the Tigers, and this is certainly a bullpen that could use really any sort of upside. Anything on Dylan Smith? I know he made his debut last year and wasn't that spectacular, but he did strike out some guys in the minors.
Yeah, he's not a lot of reliever prospects to get excited about, and he's not really one of them, but it's some sort of upside there that they really lack outside of Killian and maybe Keaton Wynn at this point. So it gives them something, someone on the 40 man that they can also move up when needed. But yeah, we'll see what happens there.
All right. Next, we got Colin Holderman, who was optioned to the minors by the Guardians. Colby Allard was selected from the minors in a corresponding move to make room on the 40-man roster. They designated Doug Nikhazy for assignment, which I thought was really curious. Yeah, because he wasn't that bad last year, and the Guardians don't really have a lot of starting pitching depth in the minors. It's like Logan Allen and Daniel Espino. So
he wasn't like a top 10 prospect for them, right? Like a 10 or 12 range prospect for them.
I'll take your word for it. I was very surprised by it regardless, just because he pitched pretty solidly last year. But to make room for Colby Allard, no less. Well, we're going for Colby Allard. He threw 55 innings in relief, so he's going to be sort of a swing man for the Guardians. But without Colin Holderman, the Guardians bullpen just keeps getting shallower and shallower. And Sean Armstrong's this top setup man with Hunter Gaddis on the IL right now. And then after that, the next righty is Matt Festa. And then they got Connor Brogdon. So I was surprised to not only see them go for Allard, but also to send Holderman to the minors. It's very curious.
Yeah. I think, you know, Gaddis should be back next week, so there's at least that. They're getting thin. I mean, Brogdon's been pretty good so far, and Holderman had a good spring. I thought he might have a breakout for them, but he wasn't looking that great so far in the regular season. So, they'll be okay. The Guardians will figure it out. They usually do with their bullpen. Right now it's Armstrong and Festa behind Cade Smith as righties, and that's you could do better than that. Yeah.
All right, and our last transaction involves Jedickson Paez, who was DFA'd by the White Sox. He was a Rule 5 pick, so he's likely going to be returned to his previous team.
Red Sox.
I thought Red Sox from one sock to another. But I thought it was interesting that in a corresponding move, Lucas Sims had his contract selected from the minors. This is a guy who had
Only 31. Sorry. He's only 31. No, I thought he was like 35, 30. Like he's still only 31. Yeah.
No, he's still got some pitches left in that arm. And he had his times back in the day with Cincinnati back in like, what was that? Seven saves in 2021 with Cincinnati. He was striking out a ton of guys, but this is a guy who doesn't have a lot of control and he hasn't been able to stay healthy for the last few years, but he's proven healthy for the White Sox thus far. He actually was decent in spring training with a zero ERA and a strikeout rate at 35%, still walking 13% of the batters he faced, but maybe Lucas Sims can work his way up in a thin White Sox bullpen.
Yeah, I know our friend of the show and also a bullpen guy, Mike Carter, also a White Sox fan. He'd been talking about Sims back in March, and I kind of ruled him out, but he didn't look bad his first outing. He threw 31 pitches yesterday. His breakers are still good. It's just the fastballs, you know, it's vulnerable. So as long as he's able to mask that, and he's still got a really good breaking ball duo with it. So I don't know. Yeah, it could be something there. And that bullpen is thin. I mean, Jordan Hicks right now is like in kind of a leverage spot. So I mean, yeah, there's a way for Sims to work his way up the ladder there.
All right, now we can move over to some injuries. I think I'm about to sneeze. Nope, it just went away. We can start with Carlos Vargas, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a lat strain for the Mariners. Cole Wilcox was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. I mean, Vargas was sort of a low-leverage guy despite his 100-mile-per-hour velocity. Wilcox also throws hard. Do you see any potential for Cole Wilcox in the Mariners' bullpen? He's looked solid thus far.
Yeah, and so far, so good. I don't know. Yeah, that like bottom trio of righties they have of Legamina, Wilcox, and Criswell they're like kind of interesting in their own way, but I don't think, especially in that bullpen, it's probably going to be hard to break through into any sort of holds role. Although I will say, I mean, Edward Bizardo, I think needs a break. He probably needs like a couple weeks off because he looks like his arm's probably taking a toll at this point. Probably no one's pitched more than him out of the bullpen the last year. So
yeah,
he looks cooked right now. So I don't know if he's going to go on the IL. I'm just speculating, but if that were to happen, then yeah, maybe one of those guys would probably more Legumina. But Wilcox, yeah, I mean, those numbers look good. Fastball's up in the 96.5 range. So could be something there long term.
Yeah. Somebody who we actually did predict to go on the IL was Carlos Estevez. And that one did come true as he was placed on the 15-day IL with a foot contusion. I talked about that last night on the first pitch. I thought that was pretty funny. Like he did get hit by a comebacker, but to use that as an excuse, I don't know who's using the excuse. I don't know if it's the Royals being like, no, nothing's wrong. It's just his foot. Or if Carlos is like, no, what are you talking about? Yeah, no, it's just my foot that hurts. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I thought that was hilarious because it's not like the foot contusion was leading to his velocity being down 5 miles per hour or that it was down all spring long before he got hit in the foot. So as soon as I saw him pitch in that first game, I mean, we can talk about it more later when we talk about the Royals, but man, Carlos Estevez to the IL. Steven Cruz recalled from the minors in a corresponding move.
Yeah. And we don't bash Carlos Estevez, but we were never high on him. And I actually like Carlos Estevez. Like I like him. He's a very entertaining, like I want him to be good. Like I don't want him not to be good, but like clearly there is something going on and there still is something going on. And, you know, I think he's just the type of guy who's like trying to fight through it and like doesn't want to like admit that he's hurt and he just wants to be there for his team, like, which I get that, but like the team should also be like, hey man, you're still throwing 90 miles per hour here, like what's going on? Is it like you're not feeling right mechanically, you know? Like I don't understand. Now we have a foot contusion, I guess, to give him some time, but yeah, I don't know, maybe he'll start throwing 96 again in his rehab appearances and whatever that is. But I feel like this is the situation where in a week or so, we're going to hear like, he's still not throwing yet, and like it's just gonna be, it's like it's not from the foot contusion, right? It's from like there's something, they're masking something with his arm. I don't know. It's not so. I think he's safe to drop pretty much everywhere at this point. I just, even if he does come back, it's probably going to be a mess, especially
exactly. If, yeah,
you know, Ursic's going to have some time to roll with that that closer role there. So I don't know. I really don't know what to expect from him now. I didn't know what to expect from him before, and now it's even more murky. So
exactly. Like you already knew that he was going to face a lot of regression this year based on his ERA estimators and just the way that he's pitched. They've also brought in the fences at Kansas City. So he was already going to be due for regression in the home run department there. But then on top of that, you have the velocity down, and now you have the IL placement. It's like, yeah, he's injured. The velocity, like his stuff is worse. He was already due for regression, even if his stuff didn't change. And the ballpark was probably going to make his numbers regress as well. It's like, I have never seen a more like perfect recipe for somebody to just have a disaster season. And it started a long time ago. I mean, we talked about it all off season before we saw how fast he was throwing in the spring. So yeah, I think
it wasn't even this. It's not even just the velo. Like he exactly couldn't locate anything either. Like he was just like out there laboring, trying to like push the ball to the strike zone. It was just like, there's how like the Royals know there's not something's wrong, and they still put him out there in the ninth inning of a major league base regular season game.
I don't know why they did that. I think maybe they were just like, oh, you're
he's
not
gonna turn a switch, or he's gonna, yeah,
I don't know. I feel like it was like they were being a little passive aggressive. They're like, oh, you're saying you're not hurting, you're totally fine. All right, go out there, let's see what you got.
You're gonna waste the game for him to do that.
He allowed six earned runs. You know, you feel bad for a guy, but like, oh my God, I was laughing a little bit because I was like, of course, like, what did you think was going
to
happen?
He knows something's not right. He has to know something's not right with him physically.
Unless like, he just doesn't look at the radar gun.
Either way, like, you know, when you're throwing 89, 90 versus like 95, 96, sure. Like, I don't know. Just all right. A messy situation all around.
For real. Yeah. I think you're good to drop Carlos Estevez.
What if he didn't get it? What if he didn't have a comebacker? What if that comebacker went through and he still gave up he still would have given up the grand slam to Dom Smith. Mm-hmm. So like, what happens after that? And you don't have the foot contusion excuse. Where are we at now? Is he still on the roster?
Tummy hurts. IL placement, tummy hurts. All right, let's move forward. We'll talk about Jose Buto, who was placed on the 15-day IL with forearm fatigue. That is a bad sign, especially for a Giants bullpen that continues to take blow after blow. Blake Tidwell was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. This is a starting pitching prospect, so Tidwell is going to be more of a long reliever or swing man. But Buto was supposed to be one of their top setup men, so Caleb Killian keeps climbing up. Keaton Wynn got a hold earlier this week. He was a guy who in the past has been a swing man, but maybe he's going to be used as more of a setup man. Those are your two top right-handed options, because I don't think they're going to be turning to JT Brubaker in high leverage. And then you got Eric Miller there. So it just keeps getting thinner and thinner for the Giants.
Yeah, Buto's number, I shouldn't say he's never really been on fantasy radar, even in Olds leagues. I've never been a fan, but yeah, it's just another, yeah, it still thins out their bullpen. I Keaton Wynn looked really good his last outing. Killian looked good it's his first outing, and then he finally made a second appearance a week later yesterday, and he wasn't as good, but I get the Killian love. I don't know why it took him a week to throw. I hope they're not they kind of were like that with Randy Rodriguez. I mean, I know it's like a new manager, but like the organization still, like they were very, very cautious of Randy Rodriguez last year, and maybe they're doing the same thing with Killian.
Did not work out.
And yeah, exactly. It didn't, like, and then they started kind of, I don't know. It's hard to predict injuries anyway. So yeah. But yeah, it's really Keaton Wynn and Killian behind Ryan Walker right now until Paguero's back. And I don't know, that might be a couple weeks still. So things are really thin there. It's not like Ryan Walker's looked that great anyway either, so it's dicey in that bullpen.
Yeah, it looks like Paguero threw a 20 pitch live batting practice session on Monday, which was the 30th of March. He's coming back from a hamstring strain, so I he could be back, probably will probably be back in the minimum time. I wouldn't expect him to be out much longer
sometime in April strain.
Yeah. So we'll see him soon. We'll see. Hopefully his control looks okay, because that's a guy who throws really hard, and that usually comes with not the best command. In other rumors news, jumping off of the Paguero news, let's go like three at a time on these guys. Andrew Kittredge is recovering from shoulder inflammation. He started a rehab assignment on April 1st, so we could see Kittredge return in the minimum time for the Orioles. And Edwin Uceta has a shoulder impingement. He threw live BP last week, looking to return to the Rays. And lastly, Jimmy Garcia, who's recovering from elbow surgery. He threw a bullpen session on 3/31. So it sounds like Uceta and Garcia are a little bit behind Kittredge, but any takes on these three?
Yeah, I mean, Uceta's the big name right now. I keep seeing him thrown around. People think he's like going to be the savior in Tampa Bay, and it's like the same people who think like who didn't want to draft Griffin Jacks because it was going to be a committee, but then they think like Uceta is going to be the savior there, and like he's not going to be used as the closer, like either
way. But that could like inadvertently be a savior in terms of allowing the bullpen to get some structure. If you have Uceta as the guy that can mix and match, then you get more structure with the other guys.
That's the thing, especially like, I mean, that very first outing, it's like Seymour just got destroyed in the sixth inning, and they went to Clevinger, and then they went to Jacks to try to get out of the sixth inning. It's like that's Edwin Uceta's spot. That's, he comes in, he's the stopper, he finishes the sixth inning, then pitches the seventh inning, and then you have the eighth and ninth for Clevinger and Jacks. That's like how they would be going in a normal, with Uceta there. I think that Uceta helps the bullpen in general, but I think from a fantasy standpoint, I'm not so sure you're going to, I wouldn't expect a ton of saves from Uceta. Cause like, as long as he's been there, he's been that like one and two thirds inning, you know, get the last out of the six and then finish the seven type guy. And that's where he's been best. I think that's probably the role they should keep him in when he is healthy. But yeah, I don't know. It's obviously an intriguing arm to gamble on. And if you have an IL spot and you just want to stash him and then see what happens when he returns, I get it. But I just wouldn't count on him being like a big boost to your saves anytime soon. Cause either he's going to have that role or he's going to get a couple saves here. And it's just going to be a different guy every day for the Rays. Cause that's kind of what we've seen so far. So I don't think they're saving the closer role for Uceta when he returns.
Agreed. Okay, next trio, we have Hunter Gaddis, who's returning from forearm tightness. He made his second rehab appearance on April 1st, so he should be coming back in the minimum time. Josh Hader, who's out with biceps inflammation, threw a bullpen session last Friday. I think the news I heard on Hader was that he's not going to return until like mid-May or something, early May.
Yeah, I'm starting to get like a little ominous vibe from that. It's the Astros again too, which is like they always pushing back the dates of the return of their injured guys. And this feels like it could be another one. Cause yeah, like it was like he threw a bullpen in March, his first bullpen. I was like, oh, he feels great, everything's fine. And then it's just like, he throws like a bullpen once a week, and they're like, yeah, he's going to throw another bullpen next week. And like, it's, eventually he's going to start facing live hitters, hopefully by mid-April, but like we'll see in 2 weeks if he's facing live hitters or not. That's I guess the next test. And then if he does, and then he gets out to a rehab assignment by the end of April, maybe mid early May he's back. But yeah, it's just I'm starting to feel a little bit more ominous about this whole Josh Hader thing. We'll see.
Next three, we've got Kirby Yates, who's out with knee inflammation. He threw an abbreviated bullpen session on April 1st. Orion Kerkering is returning from a hamstring strain. He made back-to-back appearances this week, so we should see him back in the minimum time. And Jason Adam, who is out with a ruptured quad tendon, he threw a sim game on March 31st and will make back-to-back appearances this weekend, which should prime him to return in the minimum time. I think the most fantasy relevant one is going to be Yates. Do you think when he returns that he pushes Romano for that role?
Yeah, I think possibly if he's I don't know. I really don't like this bullpen right now. And it doesn't sound like Joyce is that far behind either. So Yeah, I think as long as Romano is not imploding by the time Yates returns, he should hang on to the role. But I think that's still going to be a very touch and feel type situation where it could change. Yeah, one bad outing, but from Romano, and they go to Yates the next time, and then they keep it with Yates. But yeah, I don't know. This it's not a great situation right now with the Angels. Yeah.
All right. Well, that will wrap up the news and notes from the past week. Now we can move into our next section, three up, three down. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham discussing relief pitchers. We're moving into our three up, three down section where we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks, which you can read over on pitcherlist.com. Let's start with the risers, as Trevor McGill appears to be the favorite in Milwaukee. He's got one save already, and Abner Uribe has been used earlier in ball games. I've seen him pitch the eighth multiple times already. So do you have him moving up because you think it looks like McGill's going to be used in the same role he was last year?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like even when McGill was off, they still used Uribe in the eighth. So I think it's pretty clear McGill is the closer there. Mm-hmm. And that was, we kind of got that sense the last week or two of spring training, but yeah, now it's kind of been confirmed. That doesn't mean it won't change during the season at some point, but yeah, it feels like McGill is the guy. And Uribe's look fine, but his velo is like, wait, I don't know. There's a lot of guys who have velo down, you know, their velos are down right now, but Uribe's command and velo seem down. But again, that's what we're going to talk. I have a theory about World Baseball Classic relievers, because all of them are like, they're all like not pitching. I mean, not all, but for the most part, the World Baseball Classic relievers, especially the guys who were on teams, who made it to the semifinals, like they're all struggling right now, either stuff wise, command wise, or both. For like Garrett Whitlock, he can't command anything right now, and his velo's down 2 miles per hour. So yeah, it's interesting. I think it's, you know, because they didn't get their normal spring training, like pitching in the World Baseball Classic, especially as a reliever, where you're just, it's like, you know, you don't know when you're going to pitch. Whereas like, you know, in spring training, you know the days you're going to pitch, you can get into a routine, you can get the work done that is needed to get done. So I just feel like we need to kind of treat these relievers from these WBC teams as like the first 2 weeks of the regular season are more like an extended spring training for them, because they're at least the command from all of them is off, and a lot of the guys' velo is down, and it just looks like they're not ready yet. They're a little rust. They're, you know, still fighting through it. And like a guy like, you know, Griffin Jacks has only thrown like 7 innings total since February, mm-hmm. since spring training began before the regular season. So yeah, just not a full spring workload, and just a different workload in the spring than they're used to. I think that's why all these World Baseball Classic guys are kind of struggling to begin with. And just they all look rusty, or yeah, it's something I've noticed throughout, you know, covering relievers for the first week of the year. It's just like all the WBC guys are like either velo's down, command's way off. It's, yeah, there's something there.
Yeah, I mean, the results back that up. According to a tweet from some guy named Rick Graham this morning, the combined ERA and WHIP for relievers who pitched for teams that made it to the semifinals of the WBC so far across 69 and a third innings, 5.68 ERA and a 1.56 WHIP. I'm sure Griffin Jacks is probably the major culprit.
That's what everyone said, but it's really Carlos Estevez, who, if you take away Estevez, it goes down to like 4.98 and like a 1.5 WHIP, which still isn't good. But yeah, but it also doesn't include, I mean, I didn't include like the, like, you know, Edwin Diaz pitched for Team Puerto Rico, and like, his velo is way down right now.
Didn't even make it to the semifinals.
Yeah, it's just I just feel like everyone's kind of needs like an extended ramp up period. At least the relievers. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with starters technically, but that's Nick's thing. But relievers, relievers are still definitely there's like a little bit of a lull in the WBC reliever group. So hopefully after 2 weeks they'll kind of be ready to just use this time as an extended spring training, and yeah, be ready to go after that. So I'm hoping for like Jax and other guys that they'll be fine. Yeah.
All right. Our next riser is Paul Sewald, who confirmed our offseason beliefs that he would be the Diamondbacks closer by getting the club's first two saves. He did it on back-to-back days, and then on his rest day, Jonathan Loaisiga got a save, which I thought was cool. I was unclear who was going to be the top setup man for the Diamondbacks, or who would sort of give Seawald a break. You know, the inkling would be like Kevin Ginkle, maybe Ryan Thompson, guys from the past, but the non-roster invitee, Loaisiga, got the club's first save outside of Seawald. But Seawald has looked really solid, just two outings, but 57% of his outs came on strikeouts, or 57% of his at-bats resulted in strikeouts. He's been looking, I think he struck out the side in order in his last outing. So really exciting to see that from Paul Seawald.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect that all the time, but it was, his stuff looks good. I mean, he's doing what he does. He locates his fastball up in the zone. It's 91, 92, but...
Wasn't his velo up this spring? Is it still up?
It's like where it is. It's like 91 and a half, which is where he's been at in his better years. Yeah, so it's not 90. It's 91, 92.
All right.
He's
like he's a approach angle guy. He's a guy with like a 94th percentile HAVA.
Yeah.
And we've seen it even better than that in the past, where he's been at like two, which is crazy. Like that's 100th percentile. He's at 1.7 right now, but it doesn't look like it's taken away from the effectiveness of this fastball.
Yeah. And the sweeper's still really good. So he's doing the same thing he's always done, and it's worked for the most part outside. Like last year he was hurt and velo was down, and then 2 years ago he probably had some bad luck, but I think he'll be fine. I think he can be fine for most of the season. The question I guess is like when puck returns, but I'm not too you shouldn't be worried about like guys coming off the IL, especially like, it's not like AJ Puck was, it's not Josh Hader who's like, it's like, you know, a guy who they signed to this big contract to be the closer, and he's been the closer for multiple years. Like Puck was a closer for like 2 weeks last year, and then he got hurt.
Yeah.
So I think if Seawald's, still, killing it by June when Puck returns, he should hang on to the job.
They're not going to mess with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Paul Seawald needs to be rostered in every league. I think he's a lot better than some of the relievers that maybe are locked into their roles, but
More recently. Yeah, I bumped him up to 16 because, like, him or Ryan Walker, or him or Emilio Pagan right now, and like I'll take Seawald over those guys. I mean, I don't know, Sir Anthony Dominguez, I'll take Seawald. There's like a very limited amount of guys. There's only about 18, maybe 19 guys that are actually locked into roles right now. So. Yeah, I mean, it's a no-brainer. I can't believe his roster ship numbers have been going up a little bit, but like he's still like the other day, like 2 days ago when I looked, he was still under 40% on Yahoo. So,
which is less than like Jordan Romano and the
Lucas Erceg is already. About, yeah. Lucas Erceg. Yeah. So I'll take Seawald over both easily.
I agree. All right. Our last riser is Lucas Erceg, who has benefited greatly from the demise of Carlos Estevez. He had two saves this week. We did see a save from John Schreiber, but that was after both Erceg and Matt Strom had pitched on back-to-back days. So it looks like Erceg's got the leg up over Strom. His stuff seems to be back as well. I know this was a guy whose velocity had been falling, but he got it back. I think he was averaging 98. So far this season. And I think last year we saw that dip down to 97.5, and he's over 98 right now. Yeah. Do you have more confidence in Erceg? I know you were sort of a little bit wary of his stuff, but maybe the role has gotten you locked back into Lucas Erceg.
Yeah, I think it's, at least he does have, he doesn't really have competition there. So the velo thing is, he pitched last night in a game. I don't know if you saw, it was like late. There was a crazy game in Kansas City. It was raining. It was just, the weather was gross. Kansas City was up huge. And then Bailey Falter just started getting hammered in the ninth inning. And they had to bring in Erceg, and he came in and threw like six pitches, but he was only throwing like 94 miles per hour. I was like, what's going on here? And I'm guessing it's just like, short the weather slash him probably having to get ready really quick. Yeah. But still, like, going from that to, like, yeah, he was 99 the last outing before that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what is the real Lucas Hirsig? I think it's just, you know, it's good to see that he can throw 99 again, because we didn't see that at all last year.
Sure.
But I mean, that said, even at it's not like empty velocity, but it's not. Yeah, it's 99 is 99. But yeah, he still needs to locate it well. It still doesn't have like the most overpowering pitch mix. He has four solid. This is why I always thought he'd become like a starter at some point, because he's four above average to above average offerings, but no one or two that stand out like typically you see with a reliever. So I don't know. I feel like the upside's a little bit limited there, but this is a pretty good situation in Kansas City where they're not terrible, and he should have that role to himself. I don't think Matt doesn't seem like Matt Strom's been like exclusively used in the seventh inning. And then, yeah, they've been using Schreiber in the eighth, which that's not a threat. So yeah, I think pretty locked in role, and he's not, I think as long as he's throwing 99, even if he's not a big strikeout guy, he should, you know, limit hard contact enough where he won't hurt your ratios and whatnot. So I'm tentatively in on Hirsig, but yeah, we'll see how that velo stabilizes, I guess, over the course of the year.
As those guys rise up the ranks, others need to fall to accommodate them. So we'll talk about our three fallers on Rick's ranks. We'll start with David Bednar, who you're probably saying, Rick, why is he falling if he's leading baseball with three saves? And I think it's pretty obvious. His command is all over the place and his velocity is down.
Yeah, I mean, you said it is. And I don't know, again, there could be the WBC tax thing going on here, but he was like this in the WBC too. So it's just kind of lingered over, mm-hmm. Carried over. Maybe he's just going to be a slow start. I mean, he got off to a slow start last year, obviously. But yeah, he looks very vulnerable. Yeah, the command, it's like if you the velo is down, but you have your command, that's one thing. But losing both is, yeah, it's a little bit more dicey to play with there. So I dropped him down to 13. I think he's still in that second group of guys. But I think right now the way Helsley, Palencia, Hoffman, McGill, Fairbanks are throwing the ball, they're all looking better than Bednar at this point. So, didn't go down a tier, but those other guys look a lot better right now.
Our next faller is Emilio Pagan, whose velocity is also down. And I think one of the most important things, though, is that his splitter seems unwieldy. It's not a pitch he's throwing for strikes. I think right now he's got a 43% strike rate on the splitter through three outings thus far. And that was a pitch last year where I really think he was able to have such a good season because he was so consistent with that splitter all season at a 65% strike rate on the season. Right now, 50% with the splitter. Are you seeing the same thing with Pagan with the reduced velocity and the lack of splitter command?
Yeah. And it's, a good splitter, you're probably not, you don't want to throw in the zone that much.
No, but for strikes. You want swings.
You want to be able to, yeah, generate swing and miss from it. But I think, yeah, with his maybe the fastball velo being down, allows hitters to, you know, take an extra, making a little bit of a later adjustment and be able to lay off that splitter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's already been two home runs to lefties already in three games. Like that's. That home run thing comes back. I mean, he let up, I think, 10 home runs last year. But if he gets back, I mean, that was like, that's a good year for him. If he gets back to like allowing, yeah, I just, you know, we had our worries about him entering the season. And so far, it has not been great. But, you know, there are some, I think at least the fastball has good shape still, even down mm-hmm. a mile per hour.
Yeah, 19 inches of vert. That's crazy.
Yeah. And the concern with him, I think, is also that the people behind him would make me a little bit nervous, especially like the way Graham Ashcraft's throwing the ball right now. I mean, yeah, I could see him being the closer by the end of the month. Or if Connor Phillips can just learn how to throw his fastball for strikes a little bit more consistent.
He's already got a save.
I know. I was surprised they went to him over Ashcraft, but they seem to like Ashcraft in the 7th-8th inning right now. But mm-hmm. I mean, Ashcraft's throwing 99 again with his cutter, and he's throwing a 93-mile-per-hour slider. Like, it's literally it's Emmanuel Clase minus. Like, his stuff doesn't break as much as Clase's did.
It doesn't have the command either.
And he doesn't have the command. But the command's been better this year, and the velo is
all we want.
Yeah, is there. So it's more than good enough to be a closer. I don't know. Pagan's probably, if he has a bad weekend, like, we could see his change next week, but I'm not like totally out on him. Just, yeah, it's not a good start, especially with those guys behind him.
Yeah. And the thing with Pagan is that, yeah, it's always about the home runs. But last year he didn't have like a reduced home run rate. It was 1.31, which was around league average. His home run to fly ball ratio was at 18.5%, which is sort of around where he's been throughout his career. He's sort of been slightly above 20, yeah. But the home run rate can fluctuate. But the only time we've really seen him have a low home run rate was in 2023, when he was really good for the Twins. So with the home run rate not actually being that low last year, it was literally cut in half. It was 1.31 last year, but in that year in 2023, he was at 0.65 when he really had a low home run rate. I think last year the biggest thing was that people weren't on base when he was giving up home runs. Pagan's always going to give up home runs. Yeah. He had a 200 BABIP last year. So there was just nobody on base. He got really lucky. Yeah. And so if he's walking more guys, if the control is not there, he's allowing more guys on base, he's giving up more hits on the splitter or the fastball or whatever, then when the home runs inevitably come, this is going to be a guy who's giving up 2-3-run home runs and the ERA is really going to skyrocket. So
yeah,
I was a little bit wary of Pagan last year. His stuff is really good, but if he's just going to be giving up home runs, pitching in Cincinnati, and his command or his control isn't there, then it really can go downhill quickly.
Yeah, I think the command is going to be, I don't even think the velocity is a big thing. It's just really the command with him. And yeah, he cannot allow free base runners.
He's going to give up home runs.
A solo home run is usually not bad. But like, yeah, that 2-run home run, that changes things for a closer.
Exactly. That's double a solo home run. All right. Our last faller is a big one. Griffin Jacks. We sung his praises all off season because he wasn't being drafted that high. This is a guy who's been one of the top relievers in baseball for the past few years, and it seemed like he was finally going to get an opportunity to close full time for the Rays, but they haven't really given him an opportunity to close. They've been using him in the 6th and the 7th and the 8th, and that's sort of, I don't know if it's messed with him, but it's definitely made people vouching for him look a little silly because, you know, why isn't Griffin Jacks being used in the 9th? We talked about the lack of Edwin Uceda that forces Jacks into a high leverage role, but it's not like even when he has been pitching in outside of the 9th inning that he's been any good. He's got a 22.5 ERA right now. He's already got 2 losses, no strikeouts. The stuff is all still there. He's just getting beat. He's throwing pitches that are able to get hit.
Yeah, it's still bad. I mean, okay, yesterday was bad luck. Back-to-back errors to start the inning, followed by a check swing single, and then a ground ball through the second first base bat, the hole, and had an X batting average of 200 on it. And then he walked the guy, and then Englert came in and allowed all his runs to score.
He had 5 runs, 3 of which were earned.
Yeah. It was just like he made William Contreras look silly on a check swing, and Contreras got a single off of it. It's like, I don't know. It's annoying. It's frustrating, sure. But again, I think he's moving down because of his role. I think because it's obviously he's probably not going to touch the closer role anytime soon. Maybe, I don't know. Who knows with the Rays right now?
Right.
But it's mostly because of his role. I'm still, ultimately, I think he'll settle in and be fine. And I'm not like terribly worried about this star. It does feel, it's very, a lot of bad luck going on. Even like that first Cardinals game, like he threw one bad pitch and it was a mistake and it got hammered and that happened.
I didn't even think it was that bad. He got like 99 miles per hour on the inside edge and Burleson just beat him.
Yeah. It could have been maybe better, but yeah, it wasn't like, it's not it, most of the times that's gonna, yeah, that's not gonna result in a home run. So yeah, his fastball command is kind of a mess and it needs to be better. But again, it feels like it possibly just like not pitching enough this spring and that WBC thing. He just needs to just kind of pitch through it and just keep working on his fastball command, because the sweeper's still elite. It's probably one of the best, you know, pitches in baseball. Changeup can be really good as well. So it's, yeah, just locating a little bit better at the fastball and he'll be fine. And I mean, yeah, I would imagine the Rays are a team that's going to be able to, whatever tweaks are needed or whatever, you know, they need to do to fix him, they'll figure it out. The Rays, they do that, right? So I'm still confident about him. I just don't know. We probably have to be a little bit more, you know, what are the save totals going to look like? They're probably not going to be in the 20 plus range, but.
You never know.
Still, and again, yeah, still, it's again, it's, yeah, it is. And again, when you said it comes back, maybe they do, you know, figure things out with bullpen structure there. So I think you said that is the big thing, is him being able to give them a little bit more length so they don't have to bring in Clevinger and Jax in the sixth mm-hmm. inning, because they don't want to do that. That's not what they want to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I am not giving up on Griffin Jax just yet. And honestly, I'm going to probably start trying to buy low in some of my leagues where I
can in Yahoo leagues, he's down under 50% rostered right now. So there's a 50% chance he's available in your league. And yeah,
it's the damage is already done. It's not like when you pick him up, you get that ERA. It's like he could just pitch amazing from here on out after getting unlucky this past week. But yeah, it's really just about the usage and who knows what this bullpen is going to look like soon. And they had some weird game. So it's a possibility this could just be fixed over the weekend and Jax is better and he's maybe closes out a game or something. It's really a day-to-day thing, especially with a bullpen that's in flux like this. But I think Jax's stuff is worth taking the chance on. But that will wrap up our 3-up, 3-down. To recap, the risers were Trevor McGill, Paul Sewald, and Lucas Hursig, and the fallers were David Bednar, Emilio Pagan, and Griffin Jax. Now we can move into our main segment and discuss some actionable bullpens, but first we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back, Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. We're heading into our main topic as we'll discuss some actionable bullpens. These are bullpens where you can still take advantage of in fantasy. Guys, either there are guys on the waiver wire that appear to be the closer that you can go pick up, or these are bullpens that have yet to be decided. So you can still take advantage of that and find yourself some saves for your team. So we'll go starting with the American League and we'll start with the AL East. And it's the perfect transition off of Griffin Jax. We are undetermined in Tampa Bay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think we talked about Jax, obviously. We don't have to talk about him. Clevinger and Baker, obviously, are the other guys right now in that bullpen. Clevinger, I am also skeptical on right now. His velo is way down. His stuff's down. Even the breakers are not breaking. They're not the same. So I'm a little bit scared about Clevinger as well. That said, Brian Baker has looked awesome so far. And I, you know, in a perfect world, I think that might be the guy the Rays go with in the ninth inning for their next save chance. But they're not predictable right now, this Tampa Bay Rays bullpen. But, you know, that being said, if I'm going to have to roster someone here, I still want Jax. But I don't think Brian Baker's available almost anywhere, everywhere right now. Not the worst dart throw if you have an opening and you're just trying to figure out like a spec save guy.
Especially in a deep league, like a 15 team league. Yeah. If you're running waivers this weekend, I would definitely shoot for Brian Baker.
I added him in TGFBI for $1 this weekend. Just, you know, see what happens. Especially because I have Jax. So, yeah, like, you know,
I've had him everywhere too.
Yeah. And I feel like Baker's the better handcuff than Clevinger at this point. So,
right. Cause they don't have any lefties. It's like they got Ian Seymour, who's more of a long man. So I don't expect him to be used traditionally or in high leverage. So it's really Clevinger. And like you mentioned, Clevinger is not looking too hot either.
Yeah. So I think Baker's even for the weekend, if you want to just see how things play out, and because yeah, maybe Baker gets two saves. Like, I don't know. Maybe he gets two saves. He kind of works his way into that closer role, and then at least you're able to beat everyone else to it. But yeah, it's, again, if you like, don't go dropping someone who's established, but you know, if you got a roster spot open, Baker's probably worth the look right now. I don't know who they play this weekend, but especially if they have a matchup. Yeah.
No, but I do have a question for you. If you have Griffin Jacks, are you dropping him for Brian Baker? The Rays are facing the Twins this weekend.
Oh yeah, you definitely want to take a chance on someone there. I don't think I would drop Jacks for him. I would ideally be able to pick
have both.
Have both and see what happens, and maybe you'll have some clarity after the weekend.
Yeah.
But then you know they finally come home next week, and it's not the best matchups next week with Chicago, the Cubs, and the Yankees. Mm-hmm. But at least I don't know some things in Tampa Bay, especially in the dome there. They're back at the dome. I feel like guys will pitch better there.
All right. Next, we've got the Kansas City Royals, and we've talked at length about this one already. So not sure there's much to be said other than go grab Lucas Erceg off the wire.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone else even worth. I don't think Strom or Schreiber are worth speculating on. I think Nick Mears has looked pretty decent so far, but they don't seem to agree. They have not liked him in high leverage spots so far, going with Schreiber instead. But yeah, I think Erceg's the guy for now. You roster him and see what happens. I even if Estevez is back in 15 days, like, is he going to be throwing 96? I doubt it. Maybe this rest is what he needs, but yeah, we'll see. That's a very big question mark with Estevez.
I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
At all. All right. Sticking in the AL Central, we've got the Twins next. Cole Sands has the only save for the Twins. That's not very surprising, but Taylor Rogers hasn't been used as a closer yet. I think he pitched the ninth inning when the team was losing. I think he pitched the eighth inning. He's only pitched twice today. The Twins won by
four. Today was interesting. So Sands got the eighth. They were up two in the eighth. Sands came in and he allowed a run, and then Rogers came in to bail out Sands in the eighth inning. Rogers struck out Caglione to end the inning.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to Topa in the ninth. But the
he probably would have stayed out there if the
I wonder maybe yeah it, maybe I maybe I'm honestly I don't know the I don't remember, because like after Cruz gave up a bunch of home runs, I kind of lost track, but I of who was going to even be up for the
It would have been Jonathan India, Isaac Collins, and Lane Thomas.
Yeah, I think they would have gone to Topa. They would have gone to Topa. I think that's what they're going to, and that's gross, and I don't want any part of this bullpen anymore.
Yeah, especially, no.
I was like kind of interested in Sands if he was going to be the actual closer, but if he's sharing the role, and I just don't want anything to do with this bullpen. None of those three are exciting. Sands can be okay at points, but
if Rogers he had Topa. The role to himself.
Yeah, but Rogers and Topa, no, I'm good.
All right, we are out on the Twins bullpen. Next, we've got the A's, where we have sort of a tiny inkling. Mark Leiter Jr. got a save on Tuesday, and we saw, I think they went Hogan Harris. No, I can't remember the order anymore.
I don't even know. But
Hogan Harris, Barlow, and Sterner went 6-7-8 in some order, and then Leiter Jr. got the ninth. I'm not totally convinced that means Leiter Jr. Is the closer. We could still see these guys mix and match, but do you have any inkling on who you're leaning on here?
That's the first save, but up until then, like, it's been such a – I mean, Michael Kelly had a save chance at some point.
Yeah, and he blew it.
And, literally, I don't think they have set roles in that bullpen. I think they're just throwing darts and seeing what happens. But yeah, again, I think this is another bullpen I'm trying to stay away from. Leiter is not a guy I trust right now. Barlow's throwing like 88 with his fastball. His breakers are still good. It's just like the fastball is just gone.
Yeah, that's crazy. 89.
Yeah, Sterner looked good, really good the other night in that hold. So that's promising. I again think he's probably the combination of stuff and like just being like command right now is probably he's probably the best option they have. Hogan Harris looked better too on Wednesday. He like sacrificed command for stuff this spring. It's pretty clear. But then Wednesday he kind of flipped it and went back to like, all right, just being like, you know, just found a pretty good happy medium where he was still he was able to locate and brought down the velo a little bit, and it worked out. So I think that's, you know, a good sign for Hogan Harris. I think that's like a Harris Sterner combo, like duo in the ninth would not be terrible, but for fantasy purposes, it's not ideal. And I'd probably just stay away from the A's unless you're in an AL only, and then good luck, I guess.
They might even use it's like they just can mix and match because Leiter is sort of a lefty because of his splitter lean, and they had him face, I think, it was a ninth inning where two lefties led off.
I think he is their second left or first lefty, I guess, between him and Harris, and that's why Harris pitched the sixth and then Leiter came in the ninth. So that, and then Barlow with his breakers, he's like a righty specialist. So I think kind of Barlow and Leiter are like the two guys right now, like Leiter getting the lefties, Barlow getting the righties, but I don't have a ton of faith in that lasting too long. So
we'll see. And they haven't even played at home yet either. And that's sort of the biggest detractor from A's pitchers is pitching in Sacramento where it's terrible. Yeah. So I guess we'll just have to keep an eye on this A's bullpen. It's hard to have any leanings right now. Leiter Jr. got the first save, but we're not convinced that somebody like Sterner, who's got better stuff, won't take it from him, or maybe Hogan Harris gets more opportunities. I think we need more information here right now, but
nothing actionable right now. Yeah, I would say.
Sure. I mean, you could take a chance on any of them, but it's like rolling the dice.
Yeah.
Okay. Sticking in the AL West, we've got the Angels. I think it's been pretty much decided that Jordan Romano is the closer for the time being. As we mentioned at the top of the podcast, Kirby Yates is quickly returning from an IL stint and could give Romano a run for his money. But Romano has two saves right now and felt pretty confident. Pretty good in saying that last week that I like Romano over Stanek. That's what it worked out.
Yeah, I guess for now it's worked out. It probably.
Yeah, he's the closer.
Yeah, he is. It has not looked as good as it seems it has looked. I don't know if you see he does not know. He has no command of anything right now, and his velo is way down. But it's worked into his three outings. I don't think it's gonna. I don't see this working long term. But yeah, this is a guy you Vargas roll it, pick him up. If he's closing out games and not destroying your ratios, that's good. But once it starts, the downfall begins, you just get a jump ship quickly. Mm-hmm. I think by the end of April, I would guess that he's not closing out games for the Angels.
Wow. All right. Sell high on Jordan Romano.
If you can, I mean, if people are excited, I maybe you can find someone who's excited about it, but this isn't Jordan Romano throwing 97, 98. This is 94 miles per hour. It's good shape on it, good extension still. That's great. But he has no idea where it's going, and he has no idea where his breaker's going. It's just, he's gotten a lot of, luck, or I guess, I don't know. It's not good stuff, not good locations. I'm out.
Yeah. I'd like to see one of their young failed starters get a chance. I mean, Sam Bachman.
Bachman's fun. Yeah.
Kilo. He just doesn't have any control either. Chase Silseth doesn't really have a
fastball. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But his sweeper's cool. So we'll see. Angels are always a little bit scary.
Pomeranz has looked good too. Pomeranz had a rough second outing. There's kind of bad luck involved, but for the most part, he looks really good. He does his thing. He's like a very Blake Snell blueprinty fastball at the top of the zone, curveball bottom of the zone thing. You know, he does it well. So I think Pomeranz is the best reliever, the most consistent reliever in this bullpen, probably moving forward. I do like Bachman if he can just get some better command.
Agreed. All right. Our last American League team is the Texas Rangers. And this one has been interesting to watch. It seems like they want to use Chris Martin and Robert Garcia in the late innings, but it just hasn't come to fruition. And so much so that Tyler Alexander has two saves compared to the rest of the team's zero. I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler Alexander doesn't get a single save the rest of the season. Just the way that he's used as sort of like an opener swingman.
Did you see how he's used yesterday? Like it just like 2 days after his last save, and he's used in like a mop up.
Mop up situation.
Yeah.
So I mean, they only used him because it was like, extra innings the first time.
The first time. Yeah.
The second time every single person had pitched back to back days. So it was like, you know, who are you going to close with, Jacob Junis or Jalen Beeks? I mean, they're all the same to me, but they haven't seemed to, one thing that's clear is they haven't seemed to settle on Robert Garcia or Chris Martin. Chris Martin is the only one who did get a save opportunity.
Did he?
I thought he did. He got a blown save on.
Saturday. He came in to clean up Garcia's mess. Yeah.
Right.
And he pitched the ninth last night, gave up some runs again. Martin doesn't look great right now. I don't know if there's anything left. I mean, there's something left there. He's still throwing like 94. But I don't know. Garcia hasn't looked that great either.
And you want to like look elsewhere too and be like, oh, maybe Cole Wynn's got something and his velocity's down 3 miles an hour. So I'm like, oh, okay, this bullpen is a disaster.
Yeah, I know. And like there are times this year, I don't know, one or two of these outings, Wynn looked like I was like, oh, okay, maybe Cole Wynn is something. Maybe this is something here. But yeah, I don't think that's a long-term solution. I don't know. I still think Garcia is the one that you want to roster here, but yeah,
I don't want to give up yet.
He's still the most stable of this group. I do wonder, and I know this isn't why they brought him in, but like Jacob Junis, like be a weird, an unorthodox closer, but like he's just a command specialist. He doesn't have, it's not even good stuff. It's just like fringe stuff with really good command. But maybe that's like, at least that guy can get you through, as long as he's locating, that he can get you through a couple months, and then maybe you find one of your younger guys to take over. Kumar Rocker finally gets put in the bullpen, but
please. I know.
But yeah, I mean, like Junis feels safest amongst everyone in this bullpen. But yeah, I think they'll probably still play matchups with Garcia and Martin in the eighth and ninth. But Martin's a really tough one to trust right now. I don't know. AO only, sure, you want to see what happens, but that's. Mm-hmm. That's about it for me with Martin.
All right, let's move into the National League and start with the Nationals. They gave a save opportunity to Clayton Beter earlier in the season. I think it was on Sunday. He did it pretty well. He didn't get any strikeouts, but six pitches to get the save. That's incredibly efficient from a guy like Beter who can't throw strikes. But then they just switched everything all up yesterday on Wednesday. Against a lefty heavy portion of the Phillies lineup, they turned up PJ Poulin, who was the opener the day before. And he walked a couple guys. He put guys on. They took him out of the ballgame and replaced him with Cole Henry, who ended up allowing those runners to score to blow the save, allow the Phillies to tie it up. And then they stuck with Henry in the 10th inning, where he proceeded to allow the Phillies to walk it off. Clayton Beter did pitch the 8th inning in that one. And I know we had been thinking about Ciano Perez, who looked to be a high leverage guy maybe on opening day, but he hasn't sort of hinted at that at all. So it's sort of a disaster here, but I think they want to mix and match, and this is a terrible group of guys to do that with.
Beter for his part has looked pretty good so far. The command hasn't been as atrocious as we thought it might be.
Okay.
So that's good. And whatnot, but yeah, the usage the other day was annoying. And yeah, it looks like they're gonna go with a committee for the time being. I do think Ciano Perez is still, he's been pitching mostly the eighth inning, and I think the way that game, I think he pitched, then Beter came in for him, and then they went to Poulin But I do wonder, yeah, I wonder if Perez might get, I don't know. It's probably going to be a headache for, and I wouldn't even, outside of the deepest leagues, you're not even looking at Siano Perez anyway, or PJ Poulin. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I'm kind of intrigued by Beater because he looks good so far, and eventually they might just be like, you know what, this is the guy with the best stuff. Let's just let him finish out games and stop messing around with this. Because most of the time, teams go with this committee approach. It ends like it did the other day, and then they're like, you know what, we can't. This is dumb. So yeah, I like Beater long term. Especially if the command here is for real. I mean, he still throws like he'll just like mix in like one like way like wick, like really wild pitch like every now and then. It's like, oh, that's still Clayton Beater. It's like still just lets one go. It's not so different. Like Tanner Rainey was like that kind of another when he was back with the Nationals. So yeah, I don't know. I think Beater should be their closer. Just because the options and Cole Henry up until that outing hadn't looked bad, but he was also not, he was pitching in like the ninth inning up or down 10 runs. He was not getting any high leverage work. And then they threw him in the ninth inning to close out a game. So yeah, I mean, Gus Farland hasn't pitched since Sunday, but he looks good so far. And I want him to get more of a chance, eventually, but yeah, for now it's Clayton Beater. That's the only guy I'd be interested in rostering.
Okay, Clayton Beater in Washington. Next, we've got the Pittsburgh Pirates bullpen, and I sort of have a question mark here because we have no saves yet, or we did have a save. It was Jose Urquidy who got a 10th inning save. Yeah, so that one was weird. But outside of that, it doesn't seem like they've settled on Dennis Santana or Gregory Soto, and yeah. I'm starting to lean into thinking that the Pirates are going to go with a like clear platoon with Santana and Soto, because we've seen Santana used in the ninth inning in a tie game. And then with Santana having the day off, they prepared Soto to pitch the ninth inning in a save opportunity last night. But the Pirates put on insurance runs Tuesday and they let too. Soto pitch anyway. Yeah. Tuesday night as well. Okay. Yeah. So it feels like they might be even favoring Soto over Santana, who they signed via free agency this offseason, Gregory Soto. So do you think it's just like an either or right now? And if it is a platoon situation, who do you want more?
Oh, definitely Soto. I want more. I do think it's going to be a platoon, but yeah, I think if the Pirates didn't score, they scored runs in the ninth inning on Wednesday and Tuesday to ruin the save chance for Soto. He would have had two saves if the Pirates hadn't scored runs in the ninth. So if he had those two saves, I think, you know, they would be a lot more hype right now around Soto. Mm-hmm. He would run picked up. It's funny how those things work. Like, he was in line to get these saves and then the Pirates had to ruin it. I mean, he's looked so much. He's by far been their best reliever. He's looked the best. He's thrown the sweeper now more. That's a real big swing and miss pitch for him. So far the command hasn't, that's the thing with him is like the command can go, he can just lose it at times, but so far it's been good. He looks a lot better than Santana right now. I mean, obviously I was worried about his fastball to begin with, but even like these loss of velocity on it, and even the slider hasn't been like as good as it usually is. So yeah, I mean, maybe based on the last two outings, they are also leaning Soto as the ninth inning guy, but I bet it's going to be a matchup based for the foreseeable future. That being said, I would much rather roster Soto at this point than Santana.
All right. Gregory Soto. Sticking in the NL Central, let's talk about the Cardinals bullpen. We were, I wouldn't say overhyped, but a little bit hyped of Ryan Stanek getting a save on opening day. He did get another opportunity to close out a close ball game on Saturday. He blew that save, but he wasn't punished as the Cardinals came back to win in the 10th. But then the next time the Cardinals had a save opportunity, they switched things up. Ryan Stanek pitched the 7th, Jojo Romero the 8th, and then Riley O'Brien the 9th, where he recorded a save. And then last night, we saw the same order again. Ryan Stanek in the 7th, Romero in the 8th, and O'Brien in the 9th. Do you think this is a situation where they're going to mix and match, or do you think there's a clear switch from Stanek to O'Brien?
I think those three, the O'Brien, Romero, Stanek, I think they're just going to rotate in that closer role for the time being. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of them breaks out. I mean, O'Brien's been good so far, but it's not like he doesn't look like overpowering or anything like, oh, this guy needs to be the closer. I will say he did throw his sweeper a little bit more the other day, and he got 2 strikeouts as a result. And I would love, like, his sweeper can be really good. It could be a swing and miss pitch. And he didn't throw it that much last year, but
he threw it 0% of the time last year. That's technically a new pitch.
Yeah. So, I mean, once in a blue moon last year. So it's, you know, there's some swing and miss ability there, especially with him throwing, you know, 98 with his sinker. You know, I think Romero's looked the best of this three, though, so far, and surprisingly. And he's done a great job because they're giving him, like, that Mets series. They gave him Lindor and Soto, and he did a good job against those guys. So, but, like, again, if Soto was due up in the ninth inning, he would have been getting the ninth. So I think we're going to see them mix and match. Maybe Stanek has kind of worked his way out of the ninth inning a little bit here, but I don't know. I think it's really going to depend on matchups. Maybe there's righties on the other team that they prefer O'Brien to face or Stanek to face. So, because they're very, very, very different guys, O'Brien and Stanek. So,
yeah. Four seam splitter versus sinker sweeper.
Yeah. So, I mean, from that standpoint, with that trio, you do kind of cover all the bases. But yeah, I think it's going to be frustrating rostering all of them or any of them.
If you had a roster one, who would you roster?
I think O'Brien right now. But yeah, I mean, you could do worse than rostering any one of the three. I mean, it's not like,
yeah, I mean, that trio is above the A's bullpen. It's got to be definitely, yeah, I would say, above the Nationals bullpen, above the Twins bullpen.
Yeah. So I'm not against rostering, especially if you're more worried about, you know, especially like O'Brien and Romero should be pretty good for your ratio. Stanek might not be, but Stanek will help you with strikeouts and an occasional save. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what you're looking for, I guess. But yeah, it's from a MLB standpoint, it's a pretty good trio. But yeah, it might be a little bit frustrating for fantasy managers. And there's really nothing after, like, other than those three, it's really like kind of grim. So
yeah,
I mean, Swanson's not been good, and then like Soriano, Brule, Raycroft, they don't want that. So hopefully they can get the ball to them in the seventh, and then those three can work.
All right, the last bullpen we've got is the Diamondbacks bullpen. This is pretty much just a PSA to go grab Paul Sewald, as we mentioned earlier. He's rostered in like 40% of leagues, and guys like Jordan Romano and Lucas Erceg are rostered above him, and I think we'd much rather have Sewald over both of them. So if Sewald's available in your league, go pick him up. Do you think it's worth talking about the Rockies bullpen at all? I know we saw Jimmy Herget get a save with Victor Vodnik pitching the seventh, I think.
Eight. I think it was eight.
Maybe it was the eighth.
Yeah.
No, it was the seventh. It was a tie game because then Bernardino pitched the eighth. He got the win.
Okay, yeah. I don't really want to. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart. I don't know. I wouldn't touch the Rockies bullpen. I still think Vodnik can be good. I just probably needs to get out of Colorado. But there's a pitch mix there that can work. But again, that situation with the Rockies relievers is going to be such a nightmare with them, the way that their series are constructed for the first half of the season. So yeah, like they're never going to be on the road for a week. They're never going to be at home for a full week. It just seems like a nightmare. And especially if you don't know who's closing. Herget's okay, but it's just not. It's very low upside, especially considering it's the Rockies.
Right. All right. Well, I think I can recap this pretty quickly. In Tampa Bay, keep an eye on Brian Baker, but don't drop Griffin Jacks. In Kansas City, go grab Lucas Erceg where available and drop Carlos Estevez. For the Twins, stay far away, but it could be anybody right now. Maybe Cole Sands has got the leg up, but it's probably stay far away. The A's bullpen is very undecided to probably stay away there, especially because they haven't pitched at home as well. But I think Justin Sterner's our favorite, but Mark Leiter Jr. might be the manager's favorite. For the Angels, Jordan Romano is somebody that needs to be rostered, but don't hold on too tightly to him. Maybe sell high right now. For the Rangers, we like Robert Garcia, but the Rangers haven't really decided on that. They're really trying to push Chris Martin right now, and maybe dark horse Jacob Junis could get an opportunity there. For the Nationals, Clayton Beter looks really good. His command is improving, but the Nationals are sort of undecided there. That's one to not really target, but or stay away from. I think just hold right now. For the Pirates, Gregory Soto looks a lot better than Danny Santana, and they may be doing a platoon in Pittsburgh. So go grab Gregory Soto if you're desperate for saves. And in St. Louis, Riley O'Brien might be our favorite of the trio, but it looks like we're going to mix and match with O'Brien, Romero, and Stanek. And in Arizona, go grab Paul Sewald everywhere. But that will do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me at I Am Rick Graham on socials. Just working on putting out reliever articles every day now, a streamer article, which has a bullpen depth chart, and then the roundup that kind of covers, breaks down, you know, every pitcher who threw the day before, every reliever that pitched the day before. And then every Thursday will be the rankings with holds, closers, and save plus hold rankings coming out on Thursdays now. So yeah, it's pretty much all I have. Just that.
Oh, just that. Yeah.
It's been a lot, but it's good. I feel a lot more locked in than I have, you know, being able to just like look at the relievers every day and give full attention to it.
Rick is working at 100% capacity, and he's also on a different wavelength right now because he's just so tapped in. You can find all of his work over at pitcherlist.com. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. You can catch me on the First Pitch podcast. I did it every day for the past week, but we'll have Carson Picard this weekend, and then I'll be back during the week. And I should be doing some more work, but stay tuned for that. You can find more of my work over at baseballhq.com, where I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, and Diamondbacks. But that will do it for this episode number 154 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.